UK Wine Show, show number 135. Joseph Bakan on Cava. Yeast, grapes and global warming. We talk with Joseph Bakan, Freshnet's technical director, on what that means for Cava.
And in the news, Claudia Schiffer's breasts are best, the champagne bubble bursts, and Cork promotes its green credentials.
G'day! Welcome to the UK Wine Show, show number 135 for the 12th of December, 2008. My name's Chris Scott, and on this week's show, we continue talking with Joseph Bakan from Freshnet. We're going to be talking to him about what Freshnet are doing to improve the quality of their wines, and why they're not so keen on new grapes. In the spotlight, we continue looking at wine flavours, and in this week's quote, "Let us have wine, woman, mirth and laughter, sermons and soda water for the day after." Clues throughout the show, answers at the end, but next up we have the news with Jane.
Thanks, Chris. Moët Hennessy champagne brand Dom Pérignon has released a champagne glass that's modelled after supermodel Claudia Schiffer's breasts. Following in the footsteps of Marie Antoinette, whose breasts are said to have inspired the original rounded champagne coupe, Karl Lagerfeld has created a decorative glass, and it's shaped just like Claudia's breast and rests upon a stand comprising three miniature porcelain Dom Pérignon bottles and bears the signature of the designer and his favourite top model. The glass is being sold alongside a bottle of 1995 Dom Pérignon Enotech for an eye-watering $3,150. Schiffer and Lagerfeld have had a long association with Dom Pérignon, and in 2007 the pair hosted a series of parties for the launch of Enotech 1993 vintage, the house's top cuvée.
Well, that's a great start to the news, Jane. But seriously, champagne houses are often coming up with these media stunts to get some publicity. Whether it's the most expensive diamond-crusted bottle or an extra special and extra expensive cuvée. Some of these products are truly beautiful, and they can always be considered art, well, at least pop art for the rich. But this one is certainly not useful. It's breast-shaped bowl with pink nipple included, but the bowl doesn't have a stem, so the wine will warm up quite quickly. And because it's frosted glass, or at least fairly opaque, you won't actually be able to see the bubbles. So, not practical, but let's say cheers to that. It's not all Claudia Schiffer's breasts. The recession's starting to bite in champagne. What's going on there, Jane?
Well, unfortunately, champagne shipments to all parts of the world are falling as the recession bites, according to figures released this week by trade body, the CIVC. Domestic shipments in October were down by 21%, and exports to Europe fell 24% compared with October 2007. Shipments to other countries, principally the USA and Japan, but also emerging markets such as India, Russia and China, they dropped by 23%. And what makes it worse is that it's the most important trading period of the year. Last year, 63% of champagne exports were shipped in the last 3 months alone. In Britain, the figure's lower, with about 43% of exports shipped in this period. But UK supermarkets look set to enter a Christmas price war, with half-price deals on promotional champagnes at Asda, Tesco and Sainsbury's.
With the champagne bubble pretty much burst, I imagine the idea of expanding the champagne region will probably decrease as well. A couple of years of underperforming will also see the champagne houses get a chance to build up their inventories for the next bubble. With wine sales starting to slip, one industry that's feeling it on all sides is the cork industry. New competitors are pushing, as well as the economy not helping. How are they fighting back? With pussycats and birds. What's all that about, Jane?
Well, it was all explained to us in a BBC TV programme this week about cork forests that highlights the environmental benefits of natural cork and what the consequences might be if the wine industry were to switch to screw caps and synthetic stoppers. Titled Cork, Forest in a Bottle, the programme promotes natural cork as the green choice of closure and gives a wonderful overview of the 300-year-old ecosystem the forests have generated, not to mention the 60,000 workers who rely on the industry for their livelihood. It's abundantly clear the cork industry can only survive if the wine industry continues using natural cork. The programme touches on the issues of cork taint and claims that in 2006 the chemical TCA that causes musty taints in wine had all but been eradicated from the stoppers as the onslaught of the screw cap, which has reduced demand by about a quarter, has forced cork producers to clean up their acts, their facilities and production processes. The message is that consumers need to support cork and that wine producers should promote natural cork as the environmentally friendly closure. But there is potentially good news for the cork industry. A process called aericide that was developed by NASA scientists in the 1990s to keep fruit and vegetables fresh on a space station has been proven to eliminate TCA as well. In concept trials, 90 to 95% of TCA was removed from a sealed room within 24 hours. An independent UK wine lab, Corkwise, performed the trials on behalf of aericide. That's all from me this week, but don't forget you can get these stories at our website, 3050.co.uk.
Cheers, Jane. I watched the show and the environment they've created is interesting. It's just that it's an artificial environment that needs man's intervention to maintain it. I'm sure if environmentalists were around 300 years ago when the forests were being planted, they would have said, don't create this unnatural environment. You're going to lose the wildlife that's already there. The forest got planted. The wildlife that was there has now moved on or died out and new wildlife has come in. Is it any better, any worse? I don't know. All I know is environmentalists don't like things to change. But birds and animals were definitely quite cute. But I'm not too sure if the cost of faulty wine is worth it. If you think about it, if 3% of wines closed under a cork are faulty due to cork taint or TCA, that's according to Sam Harrop, the man who runs the faults clinic at the Wine Challenge, and say your average bottle of wine is, say, £5, that means 3% of £5 is 15p. That 15p is the cost of faulty corked wine in every bottle of wine. You can say, well, that's fine. I'm going to donate 15p and I'm going to use cork because that's good for the environment of the cork industry. But 15p won't make it to the cork industry. By the time Gordon Brown's taken his VAT, by the time the retailers made their margin, the truckers have shipped the corks and the cork manufacturers have made their margin, very little will get through to the farmers to protect that industry. For me, 15p is quite a bit of money to invest in every bottle of wine, and when you know that very little of it's actually going to make any difference, it's a very inefficient method of donating money. You're better off just making a straight donation to the WWF. That finishes my wee rant. How are you going on with that quote? Let us have wine, woman, mirth and laughter, sermons and soda water for the day after. I do like that quote. Our person from the quote has had a number of different names, George, Gordon, and even Noel. He also had a reputation of being extravagant, melancholy, courageous, unconventional, eccentric, flamboyant, and controversial. Ultimately, he escaped from the British society due to allegations of sodomy and incest by living abroad from 1816. Any ideas who we were talking about? Well, next up we have the spotlight looking at flavours. A couple of weeks ago we were looking at flavours from grapes. This week, we're going to be looking at flavours due to the winemaker's influence. While fruit flavours in wine are generally associated with grapes, there's a number of different sources of flavours that can be introduced to the wine by the winemaking process. The key ingredients include oat barrels or chips, yeast, malactic fermentation, as well as carbonic maceration and temperature control. For example, adding a wine to an oak barrel will introduce vanilla, coconut, possibly cloves, butterscotch, and smoky aromas. For more information about flavours and oak barrels in general, you can go to our website. We've got a section on that called Oak Barrels. If you can recall from a couple of months ago, yeast can also introduce a range of flavours. These include fruity, floral and perfumed aromas. Malactic fermentation is a bacterial fermentation that changes malic acid to the milky lactic milk acid, and in doing so can often produce buttery flavours in the wine. If you're not sure, think about an oaky Chardonnay. These are often quite buttery. Another type of fermentation is called carbonic maceration. This is a winemaking technique where whole bunches of grapes are left whole and the grapes actually ferment inside the grape skin. It makes a soft, easy drinking wine, but you often get flavours of bubblegum, banana and occasionally cinnamon and vanilla. The last thing winemakers can do to influence the flavour of the wines is by controlling the temperature during fermentation. For example, many whites are fermented at quite a cool temperature to preserve the fruit flavours. Too high a temperature and the flavours just get blown off. Too low a temperature and the wine can develop pear drop flavours. Now, red wines are often fermented at a warmer temperature. This is to help extract flavours and colours and tannins from the grape skins. but too high a temperature and the wine can develop a caramel, burnt and cooked aromas. That ends this week's Spotlight. Hope that's given you an idea of how the winemaker can influence wines. A couple more clues for our quote. As I said earlier, this bloke was a romantic fella called George. He is also one of England's great poets. Any ideas? Well, next up, let's have a listen to Joseph Bachan talking about how freshened are improving the quality of the wines, as well as why they prefer old grape varieties to the new ones permitted in Carver. Hi, I'm here with Joseph Bachan. He is the technical director at Freshenet. How are you, Joseph?
Hola, buen día. ¿Qué tal?
As you can tell, Joseph doesn't actually speak a lot of English, so we have Jep Bagalo from Freshenet who's going to be our translator. How are you, Jep?
Very well, thank you to come. So for us, the yeast is an essential question. It's very important for us in the sense that Freshenet has his own collection of yeast. We have worked with different yeast that we has found in the region, and we has made proof analysis during a lot of years, and now we has choose natural yeast for our from our region that we reproduce systematically in Freshenet to make the first fermentation of the different varieties of grapes. Can variety of grape can make the first fermentation with different kind of yeast, and after we have another yeast to provoke the second fermentation inside the bottle. We have a scale from 1 to 100. In the positive sense, a good yeast could influence the aromas in 15-20% maximum. In the bad sense, if you choose a bad yeast, this yeast can destroy the spalking that you are looking for. Talking about the aromas, one of the most important questions is the quality of fruits that you have, and secondly, to make a good fermentation in a good conditions in a good temperature.
What about influences of bubble size based on the yeast that you use? Does the yeast make any difference to the mousse or how the wine feels in the mouth?
The kind of yeast that you use for second fermentation doesn't affect the size of the bubble, for example. The size of a bubble is affected concerning the aging time on cellar. So, but it's very important the concept of the yeast used for the second fermentation, in the sense that we have to choose one kind of yeast able to resist in extreme conditions. In the sense, inside the bottle, the pH is very low, there are a lot of alcohol, and there are not oxygen inside the bottle to be reproduced. So this yeast must transform all the sugar and must complete second fermentation, and no find residual sugar after the second fermentation. And also, the physical behavior of the yeast must facilitate after the remuage, the riddling process. So this is the conditions that for us are essential to choose the best yeast for second fermentation. And later, the bubbles is concerning the aging time that you have the bottle inside the...
So the yeast selection is all about making sure that the fermentation goes through properly and then you can get rid of the yeast afterwards, as opposed to any influence on the sort of bubble sizing. Obviously, all wine regions, as time goes on, they get better and better at making wine. What sort of improvements do you think Freshenet have made in the last, say, 10 years that have improved the quality of Carver?
The improvements of Freshenet in the cava sector, it's necessary to talk, first of all, about viticulture. What's happened? When the French varieties like Pinot Noir or Chardonnay has been accepted in the cava council, a lot of people has decided to plant Pinot, Chardonnay, in the very good conditions, to invest money, to plant in a good soils, on trellis, to respect the yields per hectare, and the traditional and autochthonous varieties has overproduction per hectare, for example, no good prunings was applied, and everybody says, no, they are the autochthonous ones, so these ones is, they grow by itself. So it's not necessary to take care, it's not necessary to invest in these varieties. But the option for Fishnet was to say, please, every year we organize conference and meetings with growers and producers in Penedès and in Cava region, who says, please, take care about the autochthonous varieties. This is a richness that we have, so we must, to invest money, Fishnet can help you in this sense. If you need the technologies to put the all vineyards on trellis for the good treatments or for the good for the best harvest, we can help you. So it's necessary to analyze and to investigate around these autochthonous varieties. So it's interesting to do a good pruning of these varieties, because the quality of grapes is the base of quality of cava. So looking for our local varieties, terroir and investments, we can achieve it. To do the best with our wine varieties, not to think that if a variety comes from another country, has a best privilege, like Chardonnay or Pinot Noir, than a Macabeo Chardonnay. So every variety must be cultivated in the best ways.
Historically, has viticulture been a bit lackadaisical, a bit not so much focused on pruning and yield control and all that sort of thing? Is Macabeo and Chirello and all that sort of stuff suffered from maybe poor viticultural practices in the past?
So it's true that the autochthonous varieties has been affected for bad practice in viticulture, especially the Parellada. The Parellada has been moved from the 300 meters of altitude to the plain with the high yields of production.
Yep.
So this is no sense. So we must to come back to the past to recuperate the finest and the highest quality of this autochthonous variety called Parellada. Another policy of Fresnet is to recuperate in the viticulture quality concept the other autochthonous varieties of this Cava region. For example, near Tarragona, in the region of Conca de Barberà, exists red variety called Trepat. Trepat is allowed to produce Cava for the blendings. So Fresnet has recuperated this variety in the blendings of rosés.
Oh, okay, so you've been making a rosé with the new variety,
Trepat, and we have, and like a Blanc de Noir too.
Which grape variety?
And with Trepat, it's possible to do for rosés and for the Blanc de Noirs, to produce Blanc de Noirs.
Blanc Noir, so a white wine from a red grape.
So it's another policy of Fresnet to invest, to recuperate this kind of varieties, to get the difference and to get the identity.
Yep.
And also, it's very interesting to looking for the terroir, the good variety adapted in this terroir, and to choose the good clone.
Mm-hmm.
Clones with not enough force of production, so to control the yields authorized per hectare.
Okay, so you're looking for different variety of different clones of, say, Macabeo that's got lower yields, and you're just trying to find the particular genetic version of that that will produce the yields that you're after.
So we must to take care more about our autochthonous varieties, because, for example, a variety called Sumoll is autochthonous of this region. It's a red variety. And nowadays, there are few producers who use it for still wines, for example.
Yeah.
But now, in Australia, they has discovered that Sumoll is very interesting. It's very interesting for the blendings in the red wines.
Okay.
So here we have a treasure, and Australia is saying, what are you making with your treasure? So now everybody's running, trying to recuperate the vineyards of Sumoll, but a lot of them has disappeared.
Oh, okay. All right, so you're rediscovering some of your grape varieties. Mm-hmm. And using them. That's quite good. And do you see that going forward? You know, what do you see in the next 10 years? Do you think are going to be the drivers for improvement of Cava and the region?
In the next 10 years, we recuperate the same idea. In the sense, we must invest in viticulture, because the technologies, we have it. Temperature of fermentation, to control the genetic yeasts, etc., etc. But the quality of Cava comes from the the fruits. So we must invest more and more in viticulture to produce a high quality of grapes, because we can improve more and more and we can achieve very an excellence of products. So in the future, like Champagne region, when you buy a bottle of champagne, you know which kind of product you are buying. So nobody asks if it's more Pinot Meunier or more Pinot Noir or more Chardonnay. So if we can achieve an excellence of varieties in the future, the people will buy cava just like a product, not regarding if you use more Parellada or use more Charello. It will be the aim, to get the excellence like a product through the excellence of grapes.
The reason I came down to Barcelona is to attend the climate change conference. You guys were one of the sponsors of that conference. How has climate change affected you guys, or have you noticed any change in climate, and what are you doing to deal with it?
So the weather change is a reality, but in our area we are conscious that it did change from 10 or 12 years back. So what's happened? We are affected for different several dryness every year, so it means that we start the harvest before. So it changed the sociological behavior of the citizens. The temporary workers who are in the harvest time, the cellars opens before to enter the grapes. In the quality, if we are talking about cavas, in this first moment or in a middle term, we think that it doesn't affect. Why? Because we realize that the total acidity in our grapes goes down every year, but this process has started a long time ago. So we have readapt the time of harvest to achieve the good content in acidity.
So you're losing acidity, but you're picking a bit earlier to maintain that freshness in the grape.
And traditionally, in this area, we must to correct the acidity of wines using the tartric.
Oh, okay, so you're adding, you're doing tartric acidity.
Because traditionally the total acidity is very low. So it's a technical question in the sense that the cava of council says, by rules, the acidity of cava must be 4, for example.
pH of 4.
No.
In
total acidity. Grams per litre.
Sulfuric grams per litre, 4.
Yep.
The good solution will say, okay, so by rule, the total acidity could be 3.6 of total acidity of sulfuric grams per liter. Why? Because if the acidity of the grapes is going down, we must to correct the wines adding tartric, so it means that the pH goes down. And for the consumer, feels that the product is more aggressive at mouth. So we...
Pressure.
It's more aggressive. Aggressive because we are not balancing the wines. So the feeling is that it's more aggressive at mouth. So it will be interesting to change the rules of the total acidity that the wine, the cava, must got. We know the problem of the total acidity who goes down. So there are a possible solution. If the weather is changing and we have high temperatures, so it means that we increase the alcoholic degree. For the cava, it could be interesting because there are some varieties like Parellada who sometimes get not the enough alcoholic, potential alcoholic degree into the grapes. It's different when we are talking about red grapes to produce red still wines, because what's happened with the weather changing, the temperature is up, so the ripeness is very fast, mm-hmm. The ripeness of sugar, but not the phenolical ripeness.
Not the flavors.
So it means that the tannins are green,
yep.
So the wine is very aggressive at mouth. So this is a real problem for the red still wines. For the cava, this is at the first moment and in the middle time, we can work with it, changing the rules, etc. In a long term, we must to think in to recuperate and to recover ancient areas where we has planted vineyards long time ago.
They were too cold.
Because it will be necessary to find the thermic contrast, in the sense that it will be interesting to put the new year, the new vineyards in 20 years, in areas where the temperatures at night was lower, mm-hmm. in the sense to provoke a good ripeness of the grapes.
Just one last question before we head off. You said a wee while ago that you produce non-vintage wines, partly because you don't get any change or very little change in vintage from year to year. That's quite contrast to, say, Champagne, who produce non-vintage wines, because they get huge changes in vintage and they need to make a non-vintage to sort of even out some of the poor years with the good years. It's almost like you're both making non-vintage wines, but for almost a completely the opposite reason. Do you want to just comment on that?
We have talked that for us, the vintage, in terms of production or in terms of quality, is not something to regard when you see a bottle. No, it's 2004 or it's 98, because it's very stable. But we use the term of vintage. Eldiu, if we use vintage in the label, it's not to say, okay, this year was excellent. We introduce this information to know the time of aging of this product.
Okay.
This is information to know the aging time of the product.
So for like a Gran Reserva or...
For example, we use it for Gran Reservas, especially for the Gran Reservas. The law of the Council of Cava oblige the producers to put the vintage into the labels of the grid reserves to know the consumer the aging time of this bottle in the cellar.
Mm-hmm. So Gran Reservas and Reservas?
For the grid reserve, you are obliged to put the vintage. For the Reserva, is optional to the producer.
Yeah.
So you can put the information or not, because the Council of Cava authorizes you to put the Reserva name in your label, but you are not obliged to put the vintage.
Mm-hmm. All right, I think we'll wrap it up there, Josep and Jip. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Cheers. Hope you enjoyed that interview with Josep. One thing that Josep said, although I wish I'd expanded on it in the interview, was that he said the size of the bubble is a function of the aging. Now, I've heard a lot of reasons about bubble size and fizz, grape varieties, tannins, methods of productions, but this is the first time someone said the age of the wine is key to bubble size. Now, I'm not 100% sure about whether this is correct, but it's certainly something I'm going to keep an eye on over the next year or so. I have one more interview with Josep, and we'll listen to that just after Christmas. But next week, since Christmas is almost upon us and the family's going to be around for the biggest meal of the year, we're going to be talking with Xavier Rousset. He's the sommelier at Texture Restaurant, and we're going to be talking to him about food and wine matching. But before we get going, how are you going with that quote? Let us have wine, woman, mirth and laughter, sermons and soda water for the day after. It's said by a famous poet of the Romantic period, and while living overseas, he befriended another poet, Percy Shelley, and Shelley's future wife, Mary Shelley. Well, to become Mary Shelley, the writer of Frankenstein. I'm talking about Lord Byron. Until next week, cheers and good drinking.
The UK Wine Show is a weekly podcast brought to you by 3050, the wine tasting company. The show is produced by Chris Scott and the news is read by Jane Scott. To listen to other shows, visit ukwineshow.co.uk. Thank you for listening.